de Jonathan Sexton.
Oh, il s'en fout tant
qu'il passe. C'est terrible. Il est là, Jonathan Sexton.
Oh, we're looking for another one. It's Canning once again, firing it in from near the sideline. It's a miracle shot. It's gone over the bar.
This is beyond cruelty. This is sadism at its worst. It is beyond belief that a team that gives so much that those fellas give today are on the wrong side of that result.
And fighting is there! Robbie Brady brings us all to our feet in Rio.
Welcome once again to the build-up here on Buzz.ie in association with Ladbrokes, where we look ahead to the sporting weekend. My name is Mark Farley, and as always, I'm joined by Mick McCarthy. Mick, last week we sat here for a good 20 minutes at the start of the show talking through what we thought was the biggest weekend of sport in the year.
However,
7 days later, we're looking ahead to possibly the biggest sporting weekend of the year, or at least sport in 2 weeks if you count the All-Ireland final being back again in 2 weekends' time.
The All-Ireland football final has returned.
Yes.
And is coming back on our radar. We've got a Rugby World Cup squad name. We've got our final warm-up game on Saturday. I know we're going to speak to Stephen Ferris about that. Don't think I can't plug just because I'm not the main presenter. We've got the All-Ireland Camogie final. And the NFL is back. We've got...
Yep. You're forgetting about the football. The Irish women's team played Tuesday. We're playing, obviously, massive match against Switzerland tonight.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, the Bulgaria game that everybody's really looking forward to.
But also, the most exciting under-21 team of all time are playing in Tala tomorrow night.
Yep.
So, with Stephen Kenny, their future senior manager, over them. There's just a load going on. I've definitely forgotten something. The US Open is on. We're going to have the finals this weekend.
Exactly. There's a lot happening.
And look, you won't watch any of it because of your newfound obsession with golf.
I was literally just about to say, there must be some sort of masters or something. There must be lads whacking a ball around the field somewhere. Look, as we mentioned, this week, all of this stuff, we'll be covering it later on in the show. We'll be chatting to Stephen Ferris, getting his reaction to the Ireland squad and looking ahead to the Wales game off the back of a more encouraging performance against Wales in the Vitality Stadium, which is not called.
It's definitely not.
Principality Stadium.
AKA the Millennium Stadium in Cardiff.
Exactly.
In the Viva this weekend.
Exactly. And we'll also be previewing the Ireland-Switzerland game and the Irish international break in general with Sean Meehan later on in the show. It's your turn to give to us a big shout this week where you'll have a chance to win 2 cakes in a sports biography. And we'll also be joined by Donnie Mahoney, our resident American, to preview the NFL. I have a vague knowledge of the NFL. I know that Larry Fitzgerald is a player. He sounds like a junior B player hurler. But you and Donny are going to be getting me hyped and explaining to me why I might actually pick a team to support this year. I've been meaning to do it for years. Maybe on the podcast we'll decide who I'm going to support.
Mark,
this year,
we do this podcast each week. I'm going to do NFL picks each week. I've decided, okay, it's part of the build up. I'm going to do a couple of picks against the spread every week. I sit beside you in the office. I do at least one podcast with you a week. You're going to be hearing a lot about the NFL from me. So I think it's time to actually, you know, not just be passively listening to me wishing I'd shut up. Know what I'm talking about, you know?
Exactly.
Pick a team. Pick the Carolina Panthers.
Look, we'll get into...
I'll tell you why in a while.
I do like the Panthers, though, because I am a big fan of the quarterback who's...
Cam Newton.
Who's going to say his name? I can't remember him. Because I loved that there was a brilliant 30 for 30 on the... Auburn Eagles rivalry, which is brilliant. But look, enough about sports documentaries and Cam Newton. Let's get into the show. But first of all, Mick, let's look back at how we got on with our predictions last week. Not well, Mick, was it?
It's not our best week. Okay, to be honest, we've had a very, very good start to this podcast. You're never going to get all your bets right, but we've been getting a lot, and we've been tapping away with our €1 bets, and we've been up, and we still are. But it was our worst week, and we went a little bit. Do you know what we did? We did the All Ireland final without Morris.
Yeah,
and
who put us in charge?
Exactly, and that didn't work out. So for the replay, let's make sure we get him in next week. Okay, that's an absolute necessity. But we did have one out of we had 5 bets, and the last one was the only one that came true. You had Dublin -5. That didn't happen. The match was a draw. You had Conor Callaghan to win man the match and Dublin to win at 6-1.
I didn't have that. That was Conor Callaghan to win man. I heard you say that. Or it was just Conor Callaghan to win man of the match for 6-1. It was Conor Callaghan to score a goal any time and Dublin to win.
All right, okay. But so I don't think you made that as an official one.
I don't
think,
yeah. Anyway, none of them came off. Whatever.
I had 3 goals in the game. There was only, like, I was unlucky with that one. Yeah, there was a missed penalty and another 2 or 3 really good saves from Stephen Cluxton. There was only 2, 11-4
And James
that
McCarthy
was
on his knees on the line.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Kerry to lead at halftime, Dublin to win at full time. That wasn't even nearly true. That was 11-1 We had a draw at halftime and Dublin at full time. You threw that one in 12-1 That wasn't even.
That wasn't an official bet. I'm not taking that. I'm not owning that one at all. I just said I'd rather that one than the other, your prediction.
And finally, the one I was sniggered at by you, not so much, but definitely by Morris later on when I told him about the one he said with no chance of happening, was under 41.5 points in the game. 116-116 Quick maths again, Mark.
38 points.
38 points. That's a that's 3.5 points under 41.5. That's a win. Finally, we're off the mark. Stephen Ferris, his first fall of the season. We'll be putting that to him when he's on with us in a few minutes. He had Wales -4 He only wanted a good performance. He didn't think we'd win. Ferris, don't know if he knew that it was Wales were going to name a second/third team. He had Wales -4 That didn't come true. Now, here's where we did do okay. It was because we had Jason Quigley on to preview Lamachenko and Campbell. Did a great job. I was never as up for a fight in my life. He wanted a Lamachenko points win, which we gave to him 5-2 That came true. That's a really good win, 5-2 We also forced him to pick a round, which he picked round 10.
Forced him to pick round after he told us that he thinks it was going to go the distance.
Yeah, exactly. So he clearly said that it was going to go the distance. So that is a win, and that is how we got on last week. We didn't win any of our big shouts. I know you're going to talk about that in a little while.
Yeah, exactly. And as always, if you are gambling, make sure to gamble responsibly. This is just a bit of fun. And as it's shown there, we don't know a whole lot about sports. So take all this advice with a pinch of salt. But one man who does know a lot about sport and indeed rugby is Stephen Ferris. So let's chat to him now. Stephen, a lot has happened since we were chatting to you last week. We'll chat about the Wales game in a second. But first of all, what was your reaction to the squad? And of course, Dev Toner missing out, someone you would have played with as well, but in the squad in general.
Yeah, it's a bit of a strange week, guys. I think there should be a lot of excitement, a lot of hype, a lot of positive energy after the squad being announced, but it almost seems like it's the opposite. And I think that's due to a couple of guys who everybody thought were going to get selected and haven't. There's been a couple of big decisions made by Joe Smith, and I think the biggest decision was to leave out Devin Toner, who he's relied upon on numerous occasions over the last 7-8 years for Leinster and for Ireland. So it's a huge call. John Klein, who only qualified to play for Ireland a few days before the Italy game, is now going to a World Cup ahead of somebody who's given their heart and soul to Irish rugby for the last, 15 years. So, as you can imagine, people aren't happy. Especially Devin Toner fans, people that have played with him. There's been guys like Luke Fitzgerald who have been extremely vocal online in terms of giving their opinion of how they feel. Joe Smith is making decisions to try and win a World Cup, and if he makes the right decisions and somebody like Klein, comes up trumps at a World Cup, then you got to respect that.
How do you feel about it as a player, as a former player yourself, Stephen, as someone that did everything you could to wear the green and to overcome so many injuries a lot throughout your career and all to always get to these big matches and these World Cups and everything like that? Is there something that kind of like grates you about the idea of somebody who kind of hasn't, not even about them being Irish or not Irish, but I suppose not being with the squad in the hard yards and building up to the World Cup?
I suppose there obviously is, born and bred on the island of Ireland. I've always dreamt of representing, Ulster and Ireland, and pulling on that green jersey. And, I think the question for me is that, does playing for Ireland mean as much to the foreign guys who have come in, served their time, the residency rule, they've stayed here for 3 years, and then they're able to represent Ireland, or they come over, they've lived for 15, 20 years in New Zealand or South Africa, but all of a sudden they have a granny who's Irish and they play for Ireland. Does it mean as much to them to represent Ireland as it does to me, or it did to me, or it did to Jamie Heaslip, or it did to Luke Fitzgerald? I don't know. I don't have that answer. And I suppose the likes of CJ Stander, Bundy Aki, you know, Klein, they're all going to say that, you know, it means the whole world to them to play for Ireland. And, you know, it's a country that's embraced those guys. It's, they've opened their door and invited them in, and they've been tremendous servants to club rugby and to Irish rugby. But is there somebody else in the system that's just as good as Klein in the second row? Is there somebody? Well, in my opinion, there probably is, and that's Devin Toner. So, yeah, it's a subject that I reckon it could be argued until the cows come home, because everybody has so many different opinions on it. And I think the easy decision for Joe to keep everybody happy would have been just to pick Devin Toner. But he believes that Klein is a better player than Devin Toner, and that's the reason why he's on the plane. And, you know, he's got a lot of decisions correct over the last number of years. And if he gets this one correct, then, you know, I think a lot of Irish fans will be eating humble pie. And but my opinion on it, it's one that I think I'm really undecided. I'm still not sure. You guys are maybe the same. I don't know what your feelings are on it either, but I think sometimes you got to just reflect, and you know the amount of time and effort that Klein and Bundy Aki and TJ Stander and the likes of have put into actually getting to this country and trying to play for Ireland is colossal. Like, it really is. And they've put in hard yards in their own countries growing up. It just doesn't happen that you jump on a plane the next thing you're playing for Ireland. Like, there's a lot of hard yards done before actually getting on the plane to come over here. So, yeah, it's a touchy subject. For me personally, I think sometimes people say too much on it, and you know, would go with their heart instead of actually thinking about, you know, the credentials that some of these players have and what impact they could have on the Irish team. And yeah, it's as I say, lads, it's one of those ones where we could sit and chat about all day long.
Yeah, exactly. It's one of those things where it's all, the timing of it as well is what makes it even more strange. Someone like CJ Stander, everybody was waiting for him to qualify and that, you know, he could get on that green jersey, whereas with John Klein, it was that, the fact that it just comes right before the World Cup, and also that it's at the expense of Devin Toner. But in terms of the technical aspects, even now, looking ahead to the World Cup, there's been a lot of chat about who's going to call the line-out. Obviously, this is the big talking point in terms of the line-out malfunctioning against England. James Ryan has been doing it, but I've been reading a lot and hearing a lot over the last week about how it's so difficult to be a tight head scrummager and both call the line out. So for, in layman's terms, what exactly do you need to have for those two roles, and why is it so difficult for one player to do them? Is it something that maybe Henderson will end up calling the line out and Ryan might just be...
Yeah, I'm not sure about that whole tight head scrummaging thing. I'm not sure about that at all. I think it's really who's comfortable with doing it. Ian Henderson called a lot of the lineouts for the British and Irish Lions team. He was playing in the midweek teams most of the time, and he was calling the lineouts and done a pretty good job of it. Gained a lot of experience there. So if I was going to put any money on somebody who's going to start in the first game against Scotland and call the lineout, it would probably be Ian Henderson. He's just got a bit more experience than Ryan. Everybody's talking about Ryan being a future captain of Ireland. They should give him it now, you know, sooner rather than later. He's a leader, he's a born leader and everything else. But, you know, this guy's under a severe amount of pressure. He's a young man, and I think getting a World Cup under his belt and just letting him play his own game is the best way of getting the best out of James Ryan. So, I think the technical aspect of it is, it's not difficult to call the right line out. It's whoever feels comfortable doing it and doesn't panic and doesn't get unsettled. And, you know, when you lose a line out, you go back to a banker ball, or you go back to something very simple. You've seen it the weekend against Wales. It's really one that didn't even have to jump out the front of the line out. Again, just to get the ball in and away, get everybody a bit of confidence. So it's just about, whoever's feeling comfortable, wrapping it out in training. But again, lads, if we go back to the old questions that you threw at me there earlier on, if Devin Toner was in the squad, he would be certainly the guy I'd be calling the line out. So maybe it's another question mark over team selection once again.
Yeah, I suppose it is one of those, like, there's a few things in it. One is that, like, as much as Toner, you know, is necessarily being left out for Jean Kleyn, I suppose, in a way, you also have to think of like the starting team as well. And it does look like, you know, it's a kind of a nod, I suppose, for a former teammate of yours, Ian Henderson, who's been kind of, you know, someone that we all think, you know, automatically the start of every tournament is like going to be first choice, but then seems to sort of always come in now the team. And a lot of that has to do with injury. But it does seem now like that we've looked at, right, this is our second row partnership in terms of starting with Henderson at four and Ryan at five. And it is almost, this could be a really big World Cup for Ian Henderson as well.
Yeah, it could be. I think one thing with me when I played was the less pressure that I had on me, the better. So if I was given things to do in a match, I hated it. Like, I didn't want to be the captain. I didn't want to have to go out and do the team talk or the toss the coin or any of that. I just wanted to focus on my own game. And the reason why was because that's what got the best out of me. So Joe has to go say, who am I going to get the best out of? Is it Ian Henderson or is it Ryan when calling the lineouts? If it's Henderson, you know, sometimes that added pressure takes away from the rest of your game. And I think we've kind of seen that, especially in the England game. You know, the 2 second rows were anonymous for the most part of the match. And you know, that's the question that I would ask: was, you know, who's going to deal with this pressure most? Who's most comfortable? And is it going to take away from other aspects of the game? Where somebody like Paul O'Connell thrives in that pressure environment. He loved taking responsibility, where others just didn't. I didn't like responsibility at all. And you know, somebody like Donegal O'Callaghan was exactly the same. He just wanted somebody to tell him exactly where to go and what to do, and that was it. So, you know, the modern game has changed slightly, and everybody, 1 to 15, seems to have responsibility a lot more nowadays. But, you know, for sure, it's a huge, huge World Cup for Ian Henderson. And, you know, he's going to have to want to start every single match and go out and prove himself that he's one of the best second rows in the world.
I was watching the Wales game last weekend, Stephen, and I couldn't help but laugh. It was like your messages from this podcast were ringing in the ears of some of the players in the first half, especially the likes of Will Addison, Kilcoyne, Andrew Conway. They were doing exactly what you would call for, which was kind of taking it upon themselves to drive at Wales, to get big hits on, to make yards. You must have been a lot happier with that performance.
Yes, absolutely was. And it just shows you the tone that it sets. You know, when you have Kilcoyne smashing people and making big carries and Addison running back with venom, like every time he got the ball, he seemed to just explode. And, you know, Conway, who I think has been a revolution, he's been superb, really, really good. And I think he's ahead of Larmour, definitely in the pecking order. I know Brandon Disco was saying is Conway ahead of him. I think he certainly is. And that's what you want. You just want a couple of sparks, a couple of game-changing moments that happen. And before you know it, you're on the front foot and the Welsh team are on the back foot, and it just gives everybody a lift. And you know, somebody like Kilcoyne commented on his Instagram that he's just so explosive and powerful. And when you have a guy who's maybe 115 kgs with that energy and that pace, because he can move for a big fella, it's really good added value to the squad. So I reckon he could definitely find himself starting the first game if Kane Healy isn't fit.
Interesting. These warm-up games are always less about results and more about the little things that you can take from them and combinations and everything as such. And I was interested in what you thought of it and how it worked was the kind of back row dynamic with Tadhg Byrne at six and Peter Matinee at seven. And like, you know, it's a combination that if they thought about in the World Cup, certainly with Henderson and Ryan in the second row, is certainly going to help the line out, if nothing else. But what did you make of it in kind of the more first up duties of the back row?
Yeah, well, I think Peter O'Mahony looked a lot busier. He looked like he had more involvement in the game, he had more of an impact on the game. I still think there's something not right about it. You know, Byrne just, he's not a big ball carrying six. He doesn't run around smashing people. He's more of the way he plays the game, he's more of a seven. Like, you know, the way he gets over the ball and slows a breakdown down. I'm just not sold yet on the back row. Again, Conan, I was probably expecting a little bit more.
Yeah.
He had a massive opportunity to go out and show himself, especially with CJ putting in a really poor performance against England. And it just didn't fire for me. And hopefully there's a lot more to come. But it just shows that Joe now has options. You know, he can put out Byrne, he can put out a man, he can put out Conan, and I think they can get a good job done. But I still think they're missing somebody like, you know, who can really give them go forward. And, you know, somebody like a Marcel Coutier at Ulster, that's the type of player that I think Ireland are missing in the back row.
We mentioned Addison there earlier on. He's one of those players that has narrowly missed out on the squad, but could well find himself in Japan at some stage, because inevitably there are going to be injuries, and you almost always have these players in reserve get called up.
Yeah,
at least one or two. How do these guys get their head right? Get, you know, back at the wheel again? That, because they kind of have to process the disappointment, but then also realise that they have to be ready to go.
Mark, I can understand that call, and I think Joe Smith probably made the right call. Will Allison has played hardly any rugby like in a year. He's come back from a couple of big injuries. You know, I think he had back surgery. He was struggling with a groin injury. You know, I think Joe probably made the right call there, because somebody like him who could be on the plane could break down very, very easily, especially with the limited squad that you have. There's so much more training that you have to do. In the match weeks, especially when you're trying to play like the opposition for the starting team, and somebody like him could break down. So I don't think he's feeling the same disappointment that Devin Toner's feeling. You know, I think Devin Toner thought, especially with the line-out going pear-shaped against England, he's in with a fairly good chance of making the squad. But, you know, Will's just got to keep the head down, keep himself fit. He's in with the players still at the minute, trying to prove it. He can keep mixing it. So, you know, just keep the head down, keep working hard. He might get a game or two for Ulster. I'd say Joe's probably spoken to all the lads to say keep yourselves fit and keep yourselves as fresh as you can, because you just don't know when that phone's going to ring.
Yeah, I think a lot of people taking holidays to Japan with the I know Jordy was saying he's gone fishing, I think. Yeah. Tom Court. Maybe Tom Court could go to Japan on holidays, actually. Yeah, if he's
still. Actually, that's a great tweet to stick out later on, lads.
They were the only notes we had written down before the show.
Tell me just one more thing on last week's game, and we'll look ahead and look at our kind of tips for the Aviva this weekend. You know, one of the things that kind of we were talking about with Morris on a rugby show yesterday was that, like, you know, Ireland had a later pre-season, at least seemingly, than the likes of England and possibly Wales. And, you know, we kind of had a run around against Italy. We played for maybe 20 minutes against England, and we probably played for about 50, 55 minutes against Wales. You know, you're hoping that that's stepping up in every game, and by the time we reach Scotland, everybody's at full pace. But I'm just wondering, we talked about kind of the intensity and the importance of the war warm-up games with you before, but I'm interested in the idea of a pre-season in general for rugby players, in that, like, how much do you have to build yourself back up? How much do you lose in the summer? It's a long time since you've played competitive rugby. You haven't played since May, maybe even, you know, like late April, early May, and suddenly you're kind of going into what the Scotland game will be very suddenly one of the biggest games of your entire career. What is it? Is it a lot of kind of fitness work? Is it strength work? What exactly goes into it?
Yeah, to be honest, I think in years gone by, it's a load of bollocks, to be honest with you. I think it's standing on a line and running 100 metres after 100 metres after 100 metres. Like, you know, I remember the day of training with Ulster and having 8 weeks of that before playing your first game. Like, and it's like, this isn't making me a better rugby player.
Yeah.
Like, this is just making me better running up and down a pitch and, like, running with a sled on my back with 50 kgs on it. I think nowadays the preseason is a lot more ball specific, where, you know, you play conditioning games, you're working on your skills while you're fatigued. You know, when you're in the gym, it's more explosiveness, it's more game related, weightlifting, instead of just getting in there and trying to clean and jerk as much as you possibly can to set the biggest number, which that's what it used to be. And I think Brian O'Driscoll and O'Connell and all back in the day of 2007 World Cup, all we did was train and train and train and train without a rugby ball. I was just get bigger, get stronger, get faster, get fitter, and that was it. I think it's changed massively. But as the last couple of weeks have proved, that, you know, there's nothing that can get you sharp other than a game. It doesn't matter how many weights you lift or how many times you run up and down the pitch with a ball in your hand. You gotta get some game time, and that's what is slightly concerning when you look at players like Keith Earls and Johnny Sexton, who have played 0 minutes and they've won match before they're going to probably start against a pretty strong Scotland squad. And, you know, their tails are going to be up. They seem to have... they're starting to peak a bit as well, starting to get a bit more consistency in their performances. So, yeah, it's pre-season. I think, lads, it changes every couple of years. You know, the thing to do 5-6 years ago was to go to Spala in Portugal and stand in an ice chamber for an hour, like, you know, and then like 2 years later, it's something completely different. You know, it's running 400 meter intervals instead of doing 20 meter intervals. And then 2 years after that, it's you know, it's all about explosiveness. So God knows what it's going to be like in another 2 or 3 years' time. It'll change again, and there won't be any pre-season. It'll just be like mini matches amongst each other or something like that. But yeah, just to reiterate my point there, I think it's more about getting game time against good opposition and not running the legs off yourself and feeling fatigued coming into those first games, as Ireland really, really did against Italy and England.
Yeah, so hopefully we will be seeing some of that game time, the precious game time for Sexton, for Earls, and for Henshaw, I suppose, as well.
Robbie, so
and you know, we kind of want Conor Murray out there as well. After, you know, there's a lot of players that you kind of want to see this weekend, and you know, we're just looking at it here. The tables have turned. I don't know whether it's because of Ireland's performance last week, or because of Wales' performance, or because we're at home. But the handicap this week on Ladbrokes is Ireland -6 at 10 to 11 both ways, and the draw 25 to 1. Ireland 4-9 to win the game, Wales 15-8. Yeah, like, I don't know, again, it's kind of tough with these warm-up games, but you know, Ireland unfortunately ended your run of success on the show so far last week by somehow going out and winning the game, lads,
hold on a second. I said about the team sheets being named, like, I didn't feel like the Wales were going to send out their C team. Like,
it's a fair point, yeah. I suppose if somebody is taking your advice here, it might be worth kind of seeing what's changed in the interval. All right, yeah, and Wales playing a load of guys nobody's ever heard of probably wasn't the greatest endorsement of your pick.
No, well, there was chat last week that there was almost a gentleman's agreement between Gatland and Smith to play a weakened team in Wales and then go full bore in Dublin this weekend. So I would be expecting both teams to go full bore in terms of their full strength team, because, you know, their first game of the Rugby World Cup is only 2 weeks after that. So, that six-point margin, I feel Wales will turn up the heat. I think they're going to come with a physicality that the English have come to Dublin with in the past. And, you know, that 6 points, I think, is a pretty big margin. Again, lad, you got to take in the weather. I know it's been pretty miserable this week. If it's a wet, dry, or a wet, windy day, you know, it could make for lower scoring also. So you got to take that into consideration. I would like to see Ireland win the match. You know what? Do you know the draw on the... The draw on the spread is probably not a bad shout. You know, Ireland to win by 6 points or something would be a bad shout. On the spread. But I think Wales are going to come with a bit of bite to them this weekend. And, you know, Warren Gatland wouldn't have liked getting beaten at home in his last game. Didn't matter what team he put out. You know, that would have hurt him slightly. So he'll be trying to get one back. So, yeah, Ireland to sneak a win, but maybe within the handicap for Wales.
Good stuff, Stephen. Thanks very much for chatting to us, and we'll chat to you again next week.
No worry, lads. Cheers, mate. Cheers, Mark.
Great stuff there from Stephen, as always. It's an interesting one. Like, there's two aspects, really, I suppose, to Tournament being dropped. There's the actual performance part, which we discussed, you know, in terms of the line out, in terms of just in general play, and should the likes of John Klein go ahead of him. But then there's also, like we said, the fact that Klein has only recently qualified, and it probably leaves a taste in some people's mouths in terms of, you know, this is, like we were saying, Tony, born and bred Irishman. But, like, it is all right to not really be sure where you stand on this, because it's not a black and white area. Like, there's so much. It's such a, like, in terms of a person's personal identity, their national identity, it's such a complicated, and there's so, it's so complicated, there's so many myriads of factors.
Me and Morris talked about this a good bit on the World Union podcast yesterday, which is back, and you can get it in this feed or the balls.ie feed or the rugby feed or wherever you're listening. And a really good podcast. So we talked about this a good bit. And, like, my thing is, everybody seems to come down in a, you're, you know, some sort of weird nationalistic asshole if you don't, if you think that these lads shouldn't be playing for Ireland, or they shouldn't be playing, and what does the green jersey even mean, and 1916 or shit. And there seems to be nothing in between, you know, and it is the epitome of an in-between situation, you know, like it is a completely grey area that is kind of, it's hard to know what to feel about it. And it's like, look, CJ Stander, Bundy Aki have been around for a long time. They've lived in Limerick and Galway, respectively, for a long time. They've been here for 5 years. They're part of the community. They're part of the rugby clubs, obviously, that thousands go and see every week. And they're part of the community, right? In the same way as anybody working here is, in the same way as that there's nothing wrong with nationalised citizenship, you know? Like, see, like, I lived in Australia for 1 year 13 years ago, and I always feel an affinity with maybe not the entire country, but definitely the city where I live.
Barbecuing,
you know?
Every night.
You know, yeah, well, not quite, but it's a different thing than actually working as an adult and, yeah, like getting married, as both of those guys have, you know, while living here and starting their families. You know, like, it is this idea that they're in no way Irish, I think, is a kind of is a very glib and easy thing to say. Just because they did come here as professional rugby players, but loads of people have come here to work. And more importantly, a lot of Irish people have left, yep, you know, these shores to go and find work. You know what I mean? And I think that these things can be fluid, and they can be both New Zealand and South African and Irish, you know, all at the same time. But the other part of it is, though, that the more common it becomes, the more you feel that this is just a professional business that has been, you know, as opposed, yeah, to this kind of team that you get behind. And you're, you know, does it become more like a club team then that you support because that's where you're from, but the actual players are nothing to do with you, you know? Like, so I just think it's so, so grey, and that's okay, you know? Yeah. And I think that the 5 year rule is going to change things massively. It's going to become a lot less common. 5 years is a long time to be playing club rugby. You're even then, they're going to have short international careers because they're going to be older, etc. And the idea that you can't nationalize, that people can't change their nationality based on residency, is kind of nonsense. You actually, I don't think there's anything they can do to stop that, you know?
Yeah, exactly. 5 years does seem a little bit more, like, by that stage, like, there are players, I remember I did a study on it when I was in college for my master's, so I was just kind of exploring that theme of national identity among the Irish soccer team. Mm. And, like, when you go into it, like, there were a couple of studies I got managed to be able to read that were more academic than just newspaper headlines or whatever, from some ex-Irish players. And it's really interesting when you look at the likes of, there are obviously people like, say, Gary Breen, Kevin Kilbane, who were born in England, but they're entire national identities, they're Irish. Mm-hmm. There are others who have sort of that dual nationality that they grew up kind of feeling, you know, affinity to both. Jack Grealish probably being a good example, yeah, a recent example.
Declan Rice.
Yeah, exactly. But there are others, like, say, I remember Andy Townsend, I think it was, who spoke about how he hadn't much, like, he obviously had the Irish ancestry, but he wasn't, like, you know, banging the green, yeah, gold drum or whatever when he was a youngster. But then he qualified for Ireland, started playing for Ireland, and then through his experience throughout his international career playing with Ireland, getting to know the Irish culture, Irish people, he then felt as Irish as anybody. Yeah. And, like, that's one of those things that it's not necessarily, you don't have to be born with a fiddle in your hand.
It's fluid, yeah. Andy Townsend's a funny one, actually, to go off point, because I remember Andy Townsend was the guy who went and did commentary on ITV for years and became their main commentator, so therefore did the England games and all, and it seemed like he paid no attention to Ireland whatsoever. He did very little Irish media and everything, yeah, once he retired, for lots of different reasons, I'm sure. But I remember then, like, literally had written him off as somebody that, like, forgot he even played for Ireland, you know? And then he was in studio one time, and they were doing analysis on an England match. Now, it wasn't a big England match, but the But it was a huge Ireland match playing the same night, and the presenter called them out and said, "You actually haven't even been watching this match, Andy. You've been watching the Ireland match on the small little screen beside you." And he just kind of started laughing. He goes, no, I've done my analysis. But I was just like, I was never as happy. It's such a weird thing, but I felt delighted that Andy cared more about the Ireland game that was on than the actual job he was doing on the night, which was to analyse the England match.
Yeah, he also, I remember he was involved in the co-commentary on, was it ITV or was one of the stations anyway, when Robbie Brady scored that goal against Italy. And you could hear, it's like the commentators commentating, and you just hear Andy Townsend coming across and going, "Yes, get in!" So like I said, and again, he will still always refer to England though as we when he's on them, on those co-commentaries, because he has, you know, he really does have dual nationality. He can be both. He don't have to be, it's not an either or thing, like I said, it's a grey area.
My last point on this is that Joe Schmidt's job is to pick a rugby team based on the people that are available to him, and
New Zealand or Joe Schmidt.
Yeah,
so it's another example of one.
But I think it can be something that comes into his consideration, but it shouldn't be the most important one. And the only reason it should is because you're thinking about squad dynamics and all, and it's nothing to do with Irish or not Irish. It's to do with new guy versus very popular, very nice, very established guy who would be decent around the squad. And actually, we know Devin Toner a little bit. We know that he's the kind of guy who'd put the arm around the younger players, guide them through the World Cup a little bit, and that's not to be forgotten. And that's why I think that there's a lot of us thinking of, from a rugby point of view and from a squad dynamics point of view, thinking like we still probably would have picked Toner. But Joe Schmidt, who knows more about rugby than any of us, picked Klein. But it was definitely a tight call. But I just don't think that where he's from or whether he's technically Irish or not is one of those decisions, and it shouldn't be for the coach, is what I mean. Yeah,
I think it's more that it just comes, it's more that's the fan thing of when you're, you know, reacting to it, rather than, I don't think it would come into his reckoning at all.
Definitely not.
But anyway, Mick, it's time for a big shout.
All right, hold it, just hold it, Alan.
Push him out.
Steady, David, don't get round. No, don't. Bloody.
So, as always, we're back with a big shout. One week, we're going to actually manage to win this, Mick. If it's your first time listening, this is the segment where one of us in the podcast is charged with coming up with a 25-1 or greater shout for the weekend. And if it comes off, we win 2 cakes and a sports biography. But the great news is that you also have that opportunity. If you have a big shout for the weekend, be sure to email thegaffer@balls.ie or tweet us, Instagram us, get in touch with us on Facebook at balls.ie. Like we said, all it has to be is a shout for the weekend sport that's 25-1 or greater. If it comes off, you will win 2 cakes and a sports biography. Last week, I had to do it. I went with Andrew Beef Johnson in the Swiss Masters, or the European Masters, I should say, in Switzerland. He didn't disgrace himself, but he wasn't in the reckoning for any kind of each way even. But that being said,
and it wouldn't matter anyway, because it would, you needed to win for the 25-1
exactly,
for the big show.
It was a bit of a mad finish to that though. It was a 4-way tie. It went to a it went to a playoff. So it was definitely worth, if anyone who was watching it to see how Beef got on, it was worth their while watching it. Unfortunately, not just wasn't for Beef. But the other one I had mentioned, just as a throwaway comment, was my initial 25-1 shout, which had nothing to do with statistics or facts or any sort of research. It was just entirely based on the people I had sold in my fantasy football wildcard. And I had said Youri Tielemans, Gylfi Sigurdsson and Harry Kane all to score any time in a treble. Tielemans scored, Kane scored, and Gylfi Sigurdsson set up Everton's first goal.
And Everton scored 3 goals.
Yep.
Like, you know, there's a great chance that Sigurdsson's going to score one of them. Like, yeah.
So I think for the rest of the year, my big shouts are going to be entirely based on the feelings in my waters.
Okay.
But Mick, this week it's your turn.
So we've been going for accumulators and doubles and, you know, players to score and everything like that. I'm going to keep it really simple this week. And it's the reason we're doing it now is because based on what we just talked about, I thought Stephen was going to gazump me actually at one stage, but he was actually going for the handicap draw. That's not what I'm going for. I'm going for something very, very simple. I want to win these 2 cakes in a sports biography, right?
Yep.
I've been looking. I've been going through our sports biographies out there. I've got the one I want picked out and everything, right? So I'm going for the minimum allowed bet, 25-1.
Oh.
It's Ireland, Wales, Saturday afternoon, a draw.
A draw.
And I'll tell you why. Because this is going to be borderline test match level, right? In everything but the result. Like, the result isn't going to matter as much. It's the kind of thing that if, you know, I just think that it could end up a draw in another game where somebody might, you know, burst through for the win, you know, try and get the win, not accept it, you know, kick the points rather than kick the corner, or kick the corner rather than kick the points, as it might be. And because the result isn't the most important thing, there's a feeling that I think it might just land on it. And I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm saying that I'm making a big shout now to say that there's a good chance of happening, and it's 25-1. And that's what I'm going to win 2 cakes in a sports biography.
I don't think in this.
Although I've contradicted myself there. I said, I don't think it's going to happen, but I'm going to win it.
It's an odd one that this week of an Ireland game, everybody was expecting that somebody would be tipping the draw, but we thought it'd be in the football rather than the rugby. Which is funny. Maybe Sean Meehan's about to do this, because he's about to chat with us in studio about the Ireland Switzerland game this Thursday, and of course the match against Bulgaria next week. We're now joined by Sean Meehan. Sean, Ireland Switzerland, it's going to be a draw, but what did the score be? Mix lost it.
It's a one-all draw. I feel it's a one-all.
Like, are we just going to draw ourselves to the finals of the Euros?
We got to a quarterfinal of a World Cup by drawing incessantly. I only feel it's fair is that that's our legacy in world football, is we may draw our way to some form of success.
We're going to draw ourselves to win the World Cup.
Hold on. Sorry, this is worth stopping on, right? Because I think it will be a draw, because I think the most likely result for any Ireland match is a draw.
Especially when Mick McCarthy's involved.
However, a draw is 2-1, which is on Ladbrokes, which is very, very good odds. Switzerland are 11-10 to win the game. Ireland are 29-10 at the moment, so close to 3-1. That suggests that punters and Ladbrokes think that Switzerland win is the most likely result at the Aviva. I have to say, I don't necessarily think that that's, you know, I think we're more likely to get a result than to get beaten, aren't we?
Yeah, I think it's an Ireland win or a Switzerland draw. Oh, sorry.
But I think a Switzerland win is probably more likely than an Ireland win. I'm not saying they're not a better team than us. I just think that we're more likely to get one of those two results than...
I don't know. Myself and Sean were chatting to Gary Connaughton of this neighbourhood on the Balls of the Football Show on Monday, and we were... Gary presents a decent argument that Ireland, it's actually on site, you can read his article on site right now, that Ireland's best strengths are actually what Switzerland's would attack Switzerland's worst weaknesses.
Okay. I read that piece and I heard it on the podcast, and for all of the good work he's done, he's left out two very important things. One is that Denmark came back from 3-0 down. Why were they 3-0 down in the first place?
That's a good
and
point.
Way more importantly, and way more lacking in the analysis, is the fact that ever since I was a young boy growing up in Talla, dreaming to play for Ireland, I'm not actually from Talla, ever since I was a young boy, all I ever thought was, we'll definitely beat Switzerland. And you know what we never do? We never beat Switzerland, and they always beat us. And this has been going back to when Mick McCarthy was originally the manager of Ireland, and we never feckin' beat Switzerland.
For some reason, all I can see is Andy O'Brien looking really disconsolate in the middle of the Irish defence. I don't know why he pops into my head.
One thing I can distinctly remember is of the Yakin brothers.
Hakan Yakin,
who was obviously their talisman, but also Murat Yakin. And I always wondered, where did I know Murat Yakin from? And if you ever watched Ice Age, the human in Ice Age, spitting image of Murat Yakin.
Well, Hakan Yakin was he actually a good player?
Nobody knows what you're talking about.
When you look it up, you'll find out.
Was Hakan Yakin actually a really good player? Or was he just really good when he played against Ireland? Because he had a decent enough club career. I can remember...
he knocked Man United out of the Champions League.
Yeah, I
was
remember with Basel. Yeah, and Man United. But apart from that, it was just like, Jesus, Switzerland again, and here comes Hakan Yakin once more.
He was part of that really good Basel team in that Champions League campaign. And then that Swiss team that kind of... Like, they got to the Euros, but didn't do anything. They were in that group with England and France and Croatia. And they didn't do much kind of... Made us look like fools. And even Russia went to that Euros and didn't do much. you know, it begs the question, what would have happened if we actually
got there? That was a good team in their prime as well, that Ireland team. But what about the so we know, like, in fairness, me joking about Gary's lack of research, and it was a joke, is, you know, based on matches from 10 years ago that aren't really relevant now. But, like, this Switzerland team compared to that one, so, you know, you mentioned Yakin, obviously they had Fry up front for about 25 years. They were a good team. Like, they were. I know they probably didn't perform at the highest level, but they were
better. They wish they had.
But they were better than us, even though we always said they weren't, you know? Now, this team, obviously, they don't have Shaqiri. He doesn't bother to play. He's decided that he doesn't want to. Ireland aren't important enough for him to put the boots on for. Xhaka is
probably going to play, which could be a benefit to Ireland.
That's it. Like, the form he's in is woeful at the moment, you know? I don't know how he's keeping his place on the Arsenal team. So, like, who else are we looking at?
Well, up top, they've not really got much by way of, like, great strikers. Like, that Swiss team had Alexander Frey and had Stefan Szapiszak coming to the end of his career. Like, they were pretty good strikers. Like, you're looking at Haris Seferovic, Josip Dermić. They're not great.
Breelin Bolo probably being their biggest goal threat.
And even at that, like, if he's to play, his best position's on the wing.
Exactly. And Stoke City fans will not be said if they hear that Breelin Bolo's or Switzerland's best goal threat, they wouldn't be too worried for us.
Like, that's so you're looking at that and you're like, it's grand. But their collective team is solid. You know, I know it's the Nations League and it's new and nobody really quite knows what it is, but they got to a semi-final of it. You know, they lost to Portugal, and, like, Portugal were playing at home, and lost to England on penos. And England are a pretty good team as well. So you're looking at, like, Fabian Schär, who I think is a very underrated centre-half, who plays for Newcastle. I think their strongest position is probably goalkeeper. You've probably got three goalkeepers that could get into any international team.
Yeah.
You've got Roman Berkey, Jan Sommer will start, and Marwan Hitz. They're great goalkeepers. Now, they can only play one, so it'll be Jan Sommer with his lovely, lovely
hair.
They
can play as many as they want.
to replace Shaqiri with Roman Berkey in the field.
But so, basically, tactically speaking, as we're talking about Gary's piece earlier on, to explore that a little bit more in depth, is really that they aren't great with aerial bombardment. And if there's one thing Irish people do well, it's aerial bombardment.
If there's one thing those pesky Danes know about.
Yeah, exactly. We'll just hoof that ball into the box. So I would, like, Ireland are most likely going to score from a set piece in any game. But in this game in particular, like, Shane Duffy, first goal scorer, is something that interests me.
I was looking it up because
me.
I had a feeling you were about to suggest it, yeah. Shane Duffy, first goal scorer. He's way down the list here, Mark. You keep going. This is...
So this is an interesting one, because Duffy could cause absolute madness in that Swiss defensive. This is... If Gary's analysis is anything to go by, yeah. Which I've put all my faith in him.
14-1.
14-1, first goal scorer. And I think Ireland are going to win. I think if this isn't a draw, it's going to be an Ireland win. I think this is one that we could steal a 1-0 win on.
Shane Duffy is also 14-1 to score last, which I think, if we're thinking about a 1-1, we're more likely to equalise than we are to score first, aren't we? Yeah. The way we did against Denmark.
And a 1-0 win means that he also scores last.
Yeah.
So you have it both ways.
So do you want to go first or last?
I'm going to go Shane Duffy, last goal scorer.
A nil-all draw here is, we mentioned the draw is 2-1. Nil-all draw is 5-1.
Well, they're my two bets.
Okay.
Nil-all draw. I would say most likely going to be nil-all draw, but if not, it'll be 1-0 Ireland with Shane Duffy to score the goal.
Okay. And Sean, you're going for a 1-1, which is 24-5, which is, you know, again, pretty decent odds. You're probably talking about around 5-1 there as well for that. A little bit less. They know that Ireland score have 1-1 draws more often.
We should just talk for a second on this Ireland team as well. We've focused a lot on Switzerland, but this Ireland team, we more than likely know what the 11 is going to start. It's up on site right now, or predicted 11. Some good signs are the likes of the performances of Callum Robinson in particular, and to Stevens obviously as well. Matt Doherty misses out, but luckily wasn't likely to play anyway. You're going to have Seamus Coleman at right back. So there is a bit of hope there for us to maybe nick something else. Like, if it's not Shane Duffy, maybe Robinson will do something. Stevens obviously is going to be a threat attacking-wise as well.
I think I think there's a nice, I think there's a decent layout of the team at the moment. I kind of like the way they're shaping up. I don't think that Ireland are suited to playing Gibraltar at the moment. I don't think that that's something, I'm glad that's out of the way almost. You know, like that was a disaster. That left a bad taste in the mouth after the last game. But I, unlike a lot of people, thought that we played well against Denmark. You know, I don't think it was just a decent result. I don't think we were ever going to, I think sometimes we're looking for Ireland to go and boss games in a way that we're not capable of against teams that are significantly better than us talent wise and technical wise, technically, I suppose. And I thought that we actually just looked very, very compact, and then we didn't just hoof the ball away the first chance we get. I've been going to Ireland matches for 10 years where it's just like when the ball is there, there's utter panic. And they just kick it as far as they can and that off slice it out to the way. You know, it's just this, it feels like, right, okay, they understand finally that they're professional footballers and they're able to pass it. And maybe we don't build phases the way we'd love to. We'd love to step to that next level. But it does seem like we're at least able to kill the game for 2 or 3 minutes at a time, which we haven't been able to do in years.
Yeah, like certainly the first half against Denmark, I thought we played quite well. We kind of just nullified their threat. They didn't do we didn't do much by way of attacking wise. But
exactly, yeah.
Sure, we weren't expecting that anyway. And Denmark were kind of like, oh, these lads actually know how to play ball again. Yeah. What's going on?
How did that happen?
And then obviously, like, you always, we seem to always look back to Georgia at home as being like, we can play football here, lads.
I know yeah. That 1-0 win against Georgia exactly. Really goes down the annals of Irish sporting football history.
But it's one that's always cited as being like, oh, McCarthy has at least instilled some form of confidence in the players that they can play. So I reckon, like, we will be under pressure. That's a given. Switzerland are a better team than us, but we've got players that can unlock a defence.
I'm interested to see. I think Howerhan will play, and I just think that's what Mick is allowing us, that the previous two managers just didn't trust, was that. I know Wes Hoolihan, different player further up the field, but just as an example, this is a game we're going to be under pressure in. And it was like O'Neill and Trapp didn't understand that to defend for 90 minutes, you have to only defend for 60 minutes because you have to have the ball some of the time. And, you know, Horahan is someone that will keep the ball, will spray the ball, might even put us into some attacking positions, and is an outlet for Duffy and Keo and for the two fullbacks when they have the ball, because Glenn Whelan's not going to be that. But if Glenn Whelan's going to be there, you need someone to stop. You need someone beside him who's going to take the ball. And by the way, Jeff Hendrick's not going to be that player either, you know. No. So we just, Horahan, Connor, is just so, so essential to that midfield.
And O'Dowda possibly could start. If it was a change to that 11 that we're predicting, it's O'Dowda instead of McLean. And he's another man who can get it, put his foot on the ball. He hasn't been playing. He wasn't playing at the weekend for Bristol City, but at least he can.
I just don't see it happening. I agree with you as an idea, but I think James McLean's going to play.
It's an imperative qualifier at home, and I think it's one of those matches that McLean will play just by virtue of.
On that note, I have one more prediction. How have we gotten? Well, we've been chatting now for 13 minutes, and this hasn't come up yet. My one final prediction. James McLean to get a yellow card. I mean, as sure as night will follow day, James McLean is going to come out into this game all guns blazing. It's a massive match for Ireland. It's a massive game for him. So obviously, at some point, he's going to miss time of tackle and get a yellow card.
I agree. Because I've been watching James McLean play for Ireland for the guts of this decade. I know what he's like. Also, I think Granit Xhaka might be a decent bet for a yellow card, just purely from how he plays football. You know, rash.
Yep. I was going to say, if it wasn't Duffy to get a goal, it would be from a penalty that Granit Xhaka would give away. But Lightning might not strike twice in the same week.
I've got, I'm on the, just looking at some more bets for this game on Ladbrokes.
No prediction yet, so you can
tell. I'm just, you know, here's one I like, right? It's on their hashtag get a price bets for this game. And how about this one? It's 5-4. I do like it though, because we've already said we think Ireland are going to get a result. Republic of Ireland to win or draw. Switzerland under 0.5 goals in the first half and under 3.5 goals in the match. So you're taking, right, if Switzerland score three, we're not getting a result, right? Yeah. So take that out of it. We're thinking we get in nil all or 1-0 up, as Ireland tend to do, you know, an 8-minute goal. And then, you know, it goes to Sean's point of a 1-1 draw. That bet looks all right, doesn't it?
Doesn't look
plus
too
it
bad.
Covers the win, plus it covers the nil all draw.
Minus again, what's the full bet?
So Ireland to win or draw.
Yep.
Switzerland under 0.5 goals in the first half, so that's not to score in the first half. And then under 3.5 goals in the match, so to score three or
less than three.
Actually, it's, yeah, if one Switzerland all, score one four, all, we're in trouble. Three, but also, we're allowed to score three. Yeah.
So it's 2-1 Ireland, basically, or 1-0 Ireland, or 1-0 draw. Three results.
Or a nil all draw.
A nil all draw as well.
So there's a lot of results there that look good. But obviously the half. Anyway, I'm gonna look at that one. 5-4. And then we've got enough bets now.
We have about 45 predictions. Yeah,
you were naming all those results. You know, we could just blow them out of the water.
Here's the thing, though. Other than your 1-1, say take Mark's nil all out of this, right? His 5-1 nil all. Sean's 1-1, 24-5. Shane Duffy 14-1 last goal score. James McLean to get a yellow card, which I have to look up a price on. And that bet that I just said, Ireland to win or draw, Switzerland under 0.5 goals in the first half and under 3.5 goals in the match. They could all win.
Yeah.
Now, they could all lose.
but
they're not contradictory. The only contradictory one is the nil-all draw.
Yeah, exactly. Look, I'm going to be looking at this now with an extra bit of passion, hoping that at least one of my 75 predictions come off.
An extra Ireland 4-0 down as James McLean desperately lunges into a tackle. Yes! Come on, Ireland!
With the help of God, a James McLean yellow card and an Ireland 10-0 win, with Shane Duffy rounding things off with the 10th goal. Before you go, Sean, it's time for 1-2-3. If this is your first time hearing about it, 1-2-3 is a brilliant game on Ladbrokes that you can play for absolutely free, where they task you with predicting three of the football matches from the weekend. You have to get all three scores correct and you will win €100 cash. If you manage to get two right, you get a €5 free bet. And if you get one, you get a €1 free bet, which is exactly what happened to me this week. I finally got off the mark. Liverpool 3, Burnley 0. That was one I was very proud of. Mick, you did an even better one.
I'm delighted with myself. I explained it on the podcast, the madness of the Lord London Derby, and I just went with 2-2, and boy, was it 2-2. It was kind of more or less, and the madness of the Lord London Derby occurred as well. It wasn't just any old 2-2, but I was so close. I think I was as close as I'll be to getting €100, at least for a while, because I had 2-0 in the Burnley-Liverpool match. Kind of had that game a little bit figured out. Burnley would frustrate them for a while. Liverpool would break through. And they just broke through that little bit early. So they scored in the 80th minute to make a 3-0. So that was gone then. But then even in Rangers and Celtic, I had 2-1 to Celtic. I was the only one that went for a Celtic win. It was 2-0. You know, it wasn't that close to 2-1, unfortunately, because of obviously Celtic getting the late goal. But still, and then to get the North London Derby right, I have to say, I wasn't too far off. It gives me impetus to keep going. I'm going to do this before the end of the season. I am.
It's really getting into so many random games there because of this game. This week, though, Mick, is by far the toughest of any of the weeks so far because it's the international break. So we're going for a couple of international games here. You haven't much to go on right now. You've got a couple of... You've got the Wales-Belarus friendlies involved in this as well and England against Bulgaria. So this is a tough one. Sean, I'm going to turn to you first, seeing as you are the person with the most pressure on you, given that you didn't get anything right last week.
Yeah, I'm still yet to break my duck.
Exactly. Give us your score for England against Bulgaria.
Going to go 4-0 England.
4-0 England.
I looked at Bulgaria's team. I know none of their players. That's not great. Immediately, like, you think Bulgaria, you think Stoichkov, Berbatov, Petrovs.
Yep.
None of them.
None of the Petrovs. Oh, yeah. None of the.
I haven't thought about
Ben.
Martin Petrov in a long time. Yeah. He's one of your favourite people, Mark, in that he's a footballer I haven't thought about enough recently.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Either of the Petrovs, even Stillian.
I take Matt Stillian all the time.
Oh yeah, Aston Villa fan. And also that's good. That sounds well for us, bodes well for Ireland, because Bulgaria then are going to be coming absolutely devastated from a 4-0 beating, and then we're going to beat them 4-0 as well. So I can't wait for that. Mick, what are you going for in England?
I have 4-0 as well. We did our 1-2-3 video that you'll see on social every week, and I picked 4-0, so that's who Sean robbed it off.
I'm going to go 3-0 just to be different, with Raheem Sterling to score anytime. Wales-Belarus, this is a tricky one because it's going to be a friendly. And Wales have an important qualifier against Azerbaijan on Friday night. So it's hard to call a score here. It's definitely going to be a Wales win, you'd imagine, but he may field a weakened team.
Even their weakened team has, you know, decent attacking threats. For me, I'm going to go 3-0 Wales.
3-0 Wales.
Yeah. See, this is where I have to be honest and say, I don't know anything about Belarus. Like, you know, I just don't. And, like, I don't even know that much about Wales, to be honest. Like, you know, but it is one of those things that I'm as likely to get the right score now by picking this as I am about studying inside out the Belarusian left wing. So I just think that these friendly matches tend to be kind of gritty enough affairs, not much happening in them. I'd be surprised to see Wales winning more than 2-0. Probably like Gareth Bale's not going to play this game. Aaron Ramsey's already gone home. And even more of their first choicers are probably going to get the rest, you know, before they go back to their club. So I'll think 2-0.
I'm going 1-0, Hal Robinson Kanu to score. This is how confident I am this week at this 1-2-3. I'm not only telling you what the result's going to be, I'm going to tell you who's going to score in them as well. And finally, Scotland against Belgium. This is an interesting one for Scotland because they've got Russia on Friday. So two important qualifiers, but they're probably looking at the Russia game more than anything in terms of trying to get a result. In the reverse fixture of this, Belgium beat Scotland. Are they going to beat them again, Sean?
They are. It's going to be 2-0 Belgium.
2-0 Belgium.
They're going to be without the brothers Hazard, but I mean, do you really need them when you have a team as good as Belgium? Yep.
2-0 Belgium, already have it in the book. I probably should wait and do my picks adjusted for what Sean says first, but I had 2-0 Belgium as well. I don't see a problem for them in this one. Scotland, not at their greatest period of their international history.
Definitely not. But
their only players are left backs in the way that Ireland's only players are right backs.
Yeah, I have the same feeling as E, but I think Scotland might nick a goal. I think this could be one where it's either Belgium go 2-0 up quickly and they sit back and kind of ease off the pedal and Scotland get a goal, or Scotland equalise and then Belgium end up getting a late goal to win it and break poor Scotland's heart. So I have gone for 2-1 to Belgium. We're going to be joined by Donny Mahoney in a second to get us hyped about the NFL season. But there's another big sporting event this weekend, Mick. The All-Ireland Camogie Final. Everybody yeah. thought this was Cork's drive for 3 in a row. But Galway pulled off the impossible, beat them in the semi-final. And now they take on Kilkenny with a chance to be crowned champions.
Yeah, and no offence to Cork, but like, you know, it's nice to not have a Cork-Kilkenny final again. And it's funny because I feel like Camogie needs something to kind of kick it into gear, because we talked about the ladies semi-finals in football a few weeks ago, and that's like there's such momentum behind ladies football and it doesn't seem to be kind of applying to Camogie. So it can be a very, very good game at times, and I think it's one to watch this week. And there's been something kind of interesting about the Cork-Kilkenny rivalry, but I also don't think it set the world on fire.
Yeah, the final 2 years ago was brilliant. Last year's final was a bit of a disappointment. It was a bit of a drab affair. There were a lot of frees, which is obviously
a problem in Camogie, yeah, exactly. In general. Yeah, so look, I mean, hopefully it's something different. I'm looking at it though like as that Galway are the usurper. So Kilkenny have this, you know, there's a good story here in Kilkenny being beaten in two finals in a row and then arriving to the third final where Cork aren't waiting for them. And it's like, do they then beat Galway and go on to become champions? And it's like, wait, and then it's Cork-Kilkenny showdown next year.
Yeah.
Or do Galway go and do have this kind of miracle year where they beat both of the big guns, you know? So that's what I'm going for, purely on the basis that they're 7-4 and Kilkenny are 4-7. So I am looking forward to it, though. And I hope there's a good crowd. And I think if you're kind of knocking around Dublin come Sunday, I think it's you could do a lot worse than head down to Croke Park, you know, because I would like to see Camogie kind of get that same sort of momentum behind it the way ladies football has.
Yeah, exactly. And hopefully, like we said, this could be a rivalry that really involves three teams if Cork do again come back next year. It could be like we talked about with Mayo in the men's football, where it was that we said if they beat Dublin and then went on and lost the final to Kerry.
Exactly.
But let's chat about American football. So when you see Dre, a DJ on the mic, ask what it's like we're getting hyped tonight. Cause if a strike, so as I mentioned, delighted to be joined by Donny Mahoney, our resident American in balls.ie office and our doctor of American football. Donny, are you excited for the new NFL season?
I'm pumped, Mark. I'm really, really pretty pumped.
Well, you're going to be, more pumped than that, because this is our Get Hyped section,
okay,
where we challenge someone to get us hyped about a sporting event that's happened this weekend that we may not be paying that much attention to. I think the NFL might be the biggest thing we've had so far. A lot of people are going to be excited about this. But for the man like myself, Donnie, who may not, you know, pay much attention until he gets to the finals, the NFC final and the AFC final. Is that what they're called?
The playoffs, yeah.
Yes.
The AFC championship game, yeah.
Yes.
Generally not called the final.
Look at I showed enough. Don't try and downplay my knowledge here. And maybe fantasy football. Why should I be interested from the start? I need a team, I think, to interest me first off. I need to pick a team to support, I think. But in general, what's happening?
Well, look, we can go into the storylines and the personalities and the players and the teams. And there's always some fascinating people involved in the NFL. But what I want to sell you on is the ritual. 6 p.m. Sunday evening, you've done all your family bits, you've had your feed, you've had your carvery, you're feeling a bit full, kind of not looking forward to the working week so much. You need 2 or 3 hours of just personal sports time, and you sit down on the couch at 6 p.m. You flip on Sky Sports or Red Zone or whatever your viewing pleasure is for NFL, and you just watch these gladiators smashing each other up, games all over the place, all kinds of craziness. You don't even really have to be so invested in, you know, like the schemes or the defenses or anything like that. It's just always there for you on a Sunday evening. Guaranteed fun, guaranteed craziness. NFL, it's great fun.
I will just add to that Red Zone point, right? Because if we're getting hyped about anything, and what am I hyped about? There's lots of things that I want to know. I'm going to listen to all my NFL podcasts, and I'm going to know all the schemes that Donnie's talking about and so on and so forth. But ultimately, what I'm looking forward to is at 6:03, sitting down, and the countdown clock of Red Zone coming on, Scott Hansen coming in, saying, "We're back for 7 hours, uninterrupted, commercial-free football." And that is what it is. There is no ads. There is 100 games happening at the same time. They're over and back from it. And it is chaotic. And the only downside of it is you don't go to the toilet for at least an hour and a half after you need to go to the toilet. And that's the only downside.
I also have an argument with the other half that, yeah, you know what we should do? We should watch 7 hours of Red Zone right now, because that's what happens to me. It's the minute I get any spare minute, I'm like, oh yeah, a bit of Red Zone here, pick on. And you get sucked in. It's like, Red Zone is a different sport to an NFL match.
Yes.
I don't know how to describe it, but it's almost like watching golf, because the way you get, when people who aren't really fans of golf, and you know, anyone who listens to this podcast know, I'm the biggest fan of golf there is over the last few weeks. But people who watch golf from a distance or just hop into it, they're like, oh, it's so boring to watch, whatever. And it's like, but it's not. Because if you go to watch any golf event and you persevere for 15 minutes watching the TV, you will immediately get sucked into, all you need to see is like, you have 4 or 5 random players and you'll see their hole, and then it's like, oh, they're going to need a birdie the next one or whatever. And you get sucked into that storyline of those players throughout the entire day. And that's kind of what happens with Red Zone, is that you're on top of so many different games that, all right, this one match that was billed as, you know, big game or whatever, isn't living up to expectations. But these guys have just, you know, they're 3rd and 10 yards at the goal line or whatever. Yeah. And it's like,
oh, when they go into like quad box, they're rushing it. Yeah. But if you add, Donnie, and you know this better than anyone, if you add fancy football to that element, and suddenly you're hanging on these score lines, these 3 games that are really, really close, and it's in the 4th quarter and everything is nuts, but the only thing you care about is if T.Y. Hilton is going to get another 3 fantasy points, and you're just begging him to go back to this Colts game that has 30 points in the difference, and obviously you just want to see, who caught it, is it Hilton, ah, no, it's this other Egypt.
Yeah, no, it's really, to me, it's the highest level of like sports entertainment that's ever been created. Nothing can beat it, nothing can top it, nothing ever will come close.
Jesus.
Yeah.
So
he's getting us hyped. That's like it.
The most hyped anyone has been about any sport ever in the history of the world, never mind this podcast.
And to me, this NFL season that's coming up is kind of, it's entering on a kind of quietly. The storylines aren't so exciting. You know, you've got the biggest news of the summer is that Andrew Luck, one of the best players in the league, retired. And, you know, people are wondering, maybe this game isn't so great for people and maybe it's hard on the bodies and all these kind of things. But like, I can guarantee you, once 6 o'clock rolls in on Sunday, I don't know who's playing anybody, all these random matchups, like, it'll just be chaos, and it's really, really exciting.
There are 2 things that pretty much every NFL season you're guaranteed. One is that going into the season, there's some drama about some massive player that's going to be suspended for the first few weeks of the season mm-hmm. and whether he's going to get off or not, which always influences where they go in fantasy football. And also that the Patriots, like there's a thousand mad things happen that the Patriots win the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Are those two things true of this season, or is it a different storyline approaching?
Well, I think with on your latter point, I mean, it would be very hard to back against the Patriots considering how reliable they have been and just how easy they made the playoff run look last year after their team looked kind of average enough during the season. Mm. So I would pick against them at your peril. As for the first thing, I mean, there's Ezekiel Elliott was a holdout for the Dallas Cowboys. He just signed a big 6-year, $90 million contract today. So there was some fantasy doubts about him.
Melvin Gordon at the Chargers, another star running back, and he's holding out as well. So that's kind of that's the suspension du jour almost of the NFL this year, is people holding out for bigger contracts instead of going to work. Le'Veon Bell did it last year, where he didn't play at all for the whole season for the Steelers. Yeah.
Probably the most interesting story from the offseason has been what's happened to Antonio Brown, who's just kind of a nutcase of the grandest proportions, and he's suffered the most painful looking foot blisters ever.
Yeah, he got frostbite from a cryotherapy chamber. He stayed in too long and was supposed to wear like these kind of like booty things and just didn't bother, so he had nothing on his feet and he got frostbite and missed like 3 weeks of camp.
Why wouldn't be long getting frostbite?
And he threatened then to retire because the NFL changed the regulations of his helmet and he wanted to wear his old helmet, and there was a big to-do about that. So anyway, those are the kind of mad things that go on in the NFL.
We get into the games that are happening this weekend in a second. First of all, you just need to pick me a team to support this year. So I don't want to support the Patriots, right? I don't want to just be a glory hunting so-and-so, like say one Mick McCarthy.
I'm in there before the glory, baby.
I don't want to be supporting somebody with no chance whatsoever. But I'm thinking along the lines of, I don't know, you're looking at being a Cavan Leeds United supporting sports fan. So I'm there for the grief. I know I'm fully buying into decades of hurt. I want some sort of semblance of hope.
Can I just say, as an Aston Villa Clare supporter, right? Is that like now Clare?
Just say how many All Irelands have you won in the last decade?
One.
Yeah, exactly.
But like, yeah, right, okay, grand. But more often than not, we don't win anything, right? And don't win a match. But anyway, what I'm saying is, I'm familiar with the grief, right? But it's been brilliant supporting the Patriots over the last, like, they've won 6 Super Bowls since I've been supporting them.
I'm just saying that
it's nice to have it as well. It's nice to have a favourite. If it's just in one sport,
I tried supporting the Patriots. I tried supporting the Boston Celtics.
It has to come from a real place. Here's a couple of teams for you. Right, Donny, have you got some actually?
I have one, yeah. I think the conventional bandwagon choice is the Cleveland Browns. Now, this is a team, I think they have a lot of tortured history, which you can really buy into, and you'll find a lot of common ground with their supporters. But they have sort of forged a strategy that will drive, that's giving them a lot of really talented young players. Plus, they traded for Odell Beckham this year. So they're really going to be talented. They've got like a kind of an amazing personality as a quarterback, this guy Baker Mayfield, who just embraces media full on and is just kind of funny. Also, they have this guy named the Scottish Hammer, who's their punter. His name is Jamie Gillen. He comes from the Scottish, like, he's born in, like, around Inverness, went to what he describes as a Harry Potter school. Then he ended up moving to America because his dad works in the RAF. He then ended up in some random Arkansas college. And kind of came out of nowhere in the combine, but he famously put his foot through three like Wilson footballs. So he booted a hole in three of them over the wintertime.
I like the sound of this.
Has long hair. He was signed by the Browns this year, and he was really brilliant during the preseason, because not just for his kicks, which were pretty decent for a kicker, but he was getting really sucked in on tackling guys. So he was like throwing his body around, doing all these rugby tackles because he's this rugby background from Scotland. So he's the most of any of the European players that have tried to break through. He's the guy who has sort of done the best. And I think you'd find something to like in the Scottish
Hammer. The only thing putting me off the Browns is that if we were doing this podcast last year, the year before, because I've talked to people about trying to find a team support, and I would always start it with, I don't want to support the Patriots, but at the same time, I don't want to support someone absolutely useless like the Cleveland Browns. I'd feel bad for them jumping on them the minute they actually
yeah,
start.
Yeah, it's a bit of a bandwagon. It's like last season's Kansas City Chiefs, but yeah, no, the Browns are a bandwagon team, but they are pretty good. Here's another couple for you, right? Chicago Bears, they are very decent at the moment. They've got a really, really good defense. But I can't see them win the Super Bowl because their quarterback's just not good enough, right? Mitchell Trubisky. But they also have that kind of, they were good in the 50s, like your teams. Yeah. You know, they had one really good team in 1985, just one year, and then kind of have been sort of lovable losers ever since. So that's, you know, they play in the cold. They're kind of working blue collar kind of guys, you know? So that's one. And then if you want to go, like, you support Leeds, you support Cavan. If you want to completely change it up and go a bit glitzy, right? But also, you'll probably end up still losing. Dallas Cowboys.
No.
America's team. No, no, you're not interested. No. Okay, one more then. Indianapolis Colts. Donnie mentioned it. They are, you know, they're proper Midwest, kind of like Lucas Oil Stadium, I think, is their stadium. That kind of sums them up a little bit. But their quarterback... They won one Super Bowl with Peyton Manning there in 2006, but they should have, like, that team should have had a way more and should have been. They were a bit kind of like losing at the last hurdle a lot, you know, losing to the Patriots and various teams. Then Andrew Luck comes in. He lasts for 7 years, retires 3 weeks before the season, just as they were starting to build up their team around him, and they had loads of like cap space, loads of like they were the coming team. They were going to win the Super Bowl next year, if not this year. Then their quarterback goes and retires. So there's loads of you know, they can't quite get over the line. They're one of those teams, but they'll always be interesting. The Colts will probably make the playoffs more often than they won't.
The only thing is that Luck retired through injuries, and they booed him, and.
Yeah, some of their fans did blue.
So like, I don't like the sound of that.
They wear blue and white.
Oh, I do like the sound of that though.
They wear blue and white. They actually basically wear the Cavan colours in full.
And the Leeds colours.
Bears, Browns, Colts. Well, wait and see. I might look at the weekend. See
Baltimore Ravens.
Mr. Matt Forte is still at Chicago Bears. Or many years ago did he leave?
He's retired.
He went to the Jets for a couple of years and then he's gone. Yeah, he's long gone actually, yeah.
Well, then that's that. I'm not supporting the Bears.
Who have you got? You're gonna wait. You can't. You're gonna like.
No, I need to pick before the
Minnesota
start,
Vikings.
You're purple just throwing names right now. I do like the Ravens as well, but and it's got the wire connection. I think I'm going to get like the obviously there's the town of Chicago. There's that, you know, Irish connection there as well. There's also I do enjoy the Chicago Blackhawks. So. I think I might go Chicago Bears.
Can I just make a late case for the Buffalo Bills?
Oh, I actually had the Bills originally, yeah.
Buffalo Bills, is Sean McKay still there?
No,
literally
Shady,
released this week.
Ah, Christ.
He's gone to the Chiefs.
They're obviously a tortured fan base and great, crazy fans who are doing like sort of throwing dildos at their